It's 11:38 p.m. in Silver Lake, California, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I am Tess Lynch in Los Angeles with
Molly Lambert.
And over in New York, we have, as always,
Emily Yoshida. Hello.
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 So we have a corrections department issue to address, I think, right up top.
Cryptid corrections.
We've been talking a lot about cryptids and cryptid songs, and particularly the song Purple People Eater. Turns out we miscategorized the Purple People Eater, which is in fact not a cryptid, but an alien. Does anybody want to discuss the difference between those two? Because I feel like that's another foggy one for me.
Yeah, could they not be both?
I thought, Molly brought this correction to our attention, but I figured that a cryptid has to be an earthly beast.
So correct? Cryptid is something that evolved on Earth that just like humans don't know about, maybe.
Right.
It's like no, a mythical, foggily about.
Yeah.
It's alien. Like an earth alien, a thing mm-hmm. that we think exists, but we don't know if it does or not.
Is the Earth Angel an alien?
Yes.
A sexy
an alien,
alien.
And a cryptid. Although the cryptid can't be a human, so I'm assuming the Earth Angel is a human. and then we were kind of looking through. There's an old list on the All of all
R.I.P.
The
All. I miss the All every day.
Me too.
I feel like the All and Gawker, both sites that don't really exist anymore, have a ton of really good like state lists like this. I remember that
yes.
Gawker did one that was like every good sandwich in every state, and they had voted and agreed on, you know, the definitive sandwich of every state. But the All has this one of the definitive secret scary monster of
That's
every
great.
State.
Yes.
Just want to clarify that while I don't like fictional maps, a real sandwich map is cool.
As long as the sandwich is the focal point of the
or
map.
Or like a monster map. Like a monster
we
map.
We found a map.
It's not a fictional map.
Yeah. It's grounded in reality. If it was like fake facts, I would hate that.
Well, I have to say that on this list, some of the more interesting, I mean, they're all really interesting, spooky, scary monsters, but the Kushtaka of Alaska
yes.
is a
so
were-otter.
Cute.
And it's a were-otter. There's also the Mogollon monster. I'm probably saying all of these wrong. Of Arizona, which is a stinky Bigfoot. There are a lot of stinky Bigfoots out there. And I think California's is the space brain, which is a, I guess, illuminated brain that has no body around it and has eyes.
Ooh.
Someone spotted them on the highway, maybe?
Ooh, never heard of that
uh-huh,
one.
The space brain, the Michigan dog man, which is a man's body and a dog's head. Also a Dave Pilkey series of children's books that is very popular with kids called Dog Man.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe based on that. And New Mexico's Spring-Heeled Jack, which looks, the All says, looks like something in between Satan and Batman.
Is that what Jumpin' Jack Flash is about?
Ooh.
It's a I gas, don't know. Gas, gas. I've always gas, wondered gas, what gas. That song is about. I don't really want to know.
I like how Maine's monster on here is just Cujo.
Right, yeah. It's just a dog.
It's just a big dog.
There are some classics.
There are a couple of classics. There are a couple of ones from the same Squonk anthology that I told you guys about last week or mm-hmm. the week before. A few of them, you know, hail from there. But I think every state has a few cryptids, and these are just kind of hand-chosen, like, best cryptids.
Well, if you have a favorite cryptid in your state that is not mentioned on this list or one that you think deserves special recognition, give us a night call at 1-240-46-NIGHT. We'd love to hear all about it. Always down yeah. to hear about new cryptids.
Also, if you've just seen a weird creature that you think may have been a cryptid, please let us know.
Right.
I look at the Ologies, one of our favorite podcasts, Night Call Adjacent podcast, Ologies. They have a Facebook group where people are always trying to identify like different bugs and stuff. And I saw a ladybug larva on there today and realized I'd seen them in the wild myself, but they are like the creepiest looking larva.
Seen a ladybug larva. What
it looks, it's like a black and yellow weevilish looking thing that has like kind of little spikies coming out of it.
Love thinking about larva.
Love thinking about larva.
Ologies.
Baby bugs.
Ologies is the larva, the larva pod.
It's one of those words that really sounds like what it means.
Yes, exactly. Also larval.
Larval. Oh, it's cute.
I don't know. It's like
it looks dangerous
to me. Maybe.
Ladybugs are good.
Yeah, we love ladybugs. And the larva apparently eat aphids. So if you see the larva around, that's a good thing. But I always was like, ugh, those bugs. I don't like those bugs. But now I'm coming around. I don't like their looks, though. I'll be honest with you about that.
They're definitely scarier looking.
What if bugs are aliens?
What if? I mean, I thought we agreed octopi are aliens, so why not bugs?
Accidentally wound up on Earth.
Oh,
so, yeah.
I read a debunked theory that there's people who believe that like all diseases come from space.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. Don't let the anti-vaxxers hear about this.
I know. Yeah,
right on.
Field day.
They're like, the common cold came from a moon rock.
Yeah.
And that's how it exists.
Hey, well, speaking of the moon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's have another moon minute. Molly found an article explaining that the moon is shrinking, which is bad news, right?
Not well, only is the moon shrinking.
Fewer germs, though, I guess.
That's true. Big if true.
Not only is the moon shrinking, the moon is shrinking, and that is causing moonquakes.
Isn't it weird that we can't see the moon having an earthquake? Do you think if you just stared at it long enough with a telescope, you could witness a moonquake?
You can barely see an earthquake unless it's a big magnitude one on Earth. Like, unless it was one that caused massive geological restructuring.
But I guess think that these are, aren't they? It's causing, like, debris. I mean, you'd think that the craters would, like, kind of implode and that if you had a good enough telescope, you might be able to peep a moonquake.
There's a subheading here. Ongoing shrinkage. So why is it? Is it just shrinking because of gravity? I'm going to make a science guess. I don't know.
Does the moon have tectonic plates? Like,
oh, yeah.
So it's
does it have a molten core?
It has fault lines. Here's what it says.
Yeah.
It says this is definitely, they found out that this is definitely happening because the moon is shrinking, not from asteroid impact or activity deep inside the moon. It doesn't seem like they are even trying to address why the moon is shrinking.
Clickbait from Life
Just
Science.
Just an FYI. Did you guys enjoy the most recent full moon?
No, because you couldn't see it here. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Nice. You could see it the night before. It's been a very misty and weird weather.
It was raining, so I enjoyed that as much as I would have enjoyed the full moon.
I don't give this rain a good rating.
Why?
It was too... I didn't
steamy?
Feel like it was purposeful enough.
Too
it was
misty mountain hop.
It was a little too misty. I've been getting these terrible headaches from the barometric pressure out here because it keeps, like, the humidity will increase, and I think the pressure falls. And it would be relieved by, like, a big rain.
Was the rain a monkey paw?
Yes.
Did you wish for the rain?
The rain was
and
a monkey paw, and then I was like, ah! I just wanted more. It needed to be amplified
just,
or, like...
It's unusual to get it so late in the season.
It is.
The
I know.
Calm,
very weird
the
weather.
The calm before the fire.
In other moon news, you guys, we are now all aware that Posh Spice has been drinking full moon water.
Yeah.
Which... is water that has been charged under a full moon. Obviously, you can make your own. You can also buy it on Etsy for it ranges. There's a big range in price for the
now,
moon water.
Do you think that Starfire water also charges the water under the moon, or do you think these are two completely different, separate water theories in practice?
I think they're separate cosmological.
Separate water cosmologies.
Separate water cosmologies. One is star-based and the other is moon-based.
What is Starfire water?
That's the one they sell it at
Cafe. That's that one. Okay,
we talked about it earlier.
The one that you've...
The fire.
That Emily's into. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Wait, how much is the moon water? Or full moon water, rather?
I'm sure whatever Posh Spice drinks.
The Posh Spice website was, I believe, in German. So I just read recaps of it. But then I went to Etsy to be like, Full Moon Water. Should I be selling Full Moon Water? And
we should sell Night Call Full Moon Water. That should be our full Alex Jones.
I don't think I could, in good conscience, sell Full Moon Water. Also, it has to be distilled.
Get in the water business.
What if we all like spit in it?
Oh, no. Molly.
We have a whole separate Patreon for people who want the water with our spit in it and for mukbang videos and to be fin-domed.
Even just saying those and the spit water together, I'm like, no.
Guys, that's our regular Patreon. That's what a Patreon is.
Well, don't tell them that's what's coming down the pipeline. They're going to be
new
tiers.
We'll only sell you the Full Moon Water if you want it. We'll take a poll. She also was saying during her week-long detox, she also listened to true crime podcasts. So Posh
Why
Spice.
Would you do that during a detox? Like a detox and true crime.
Yeah.
That's what she really listens to unwind from being a footballer's wife.
A footballer's wife.
A footballer.
I don't know. Listening to like a true crime podcast makes me feel worse than like eating a burger or whatever you might be cleansing yourself from. I don't know.
Well,
it's the guilty pleasure. As long as you're not on a detox, I think it's great to listen to true crime. But if you're on a detox, that should be detoxed from you.
Well, what if the true crime story is in fact fictional and about a fictional conspiracy? Maybe we should talk about that after we plug our book club.
Right. Well, speaking of our Patreon and all the weird kinky shit we have going on there, we're doing a book club, motherfuckers.
Actually, we are reading like one of the most erotic odysseys of all time.
It is. It's true. Kind of an OG erotic odyssey.
Yeah, we just announced our first ever book club pick, which is going to be Valley of the Dolls. We are very excited about it. I've never read it, so I'm super excited about that.
How have you never read it, Emily? It blew my mind.
I'm so excited.
I'm
going to admit, I've only skim read it at a bookstore.
What? I assumed you guys had already read it.
I think maybe you read me the dirty parts on the phone.
Oh, for sure I did. That was definitely.
I never maybe read the whole thing in context.
Well, this will be a new journey, for one and a half of us. So we're very excited about it. We're excited to share it with you guys. We are going to be dropping our first ever Patreon book club podcast for subscribers at the $5 level and above on June 15th. So you have until then to get caught up and check out the book. And also if you subscribe at that level, you can get a 15% discount on the book from our friends at Skylight Books in Los Angeles, but they'll ship it anywhere. And you can also just get it at your local library or somewhere chill like that. We love libraries.
Audiobooks, probably an audiobook.
Yeah, you could. Sure.
I'm also going to say, if you want to be like George Costanza and just watch the movie and listen to the episodes, that's okay too, as long as you subscribe to our Patreon.
Yeah, exactly.
And before that episode drops, if you're reading the book and have any fun thoughts or feedback about it that we might want to bring up on the show, give us a night call or a night email and let us know your thoughts about the book so we can include it in the show.
I'm very excited to talk about the nearly 3 hour long movie that Emily made us watch. And apparently I am the only one who enjoyed it.
I have no idea how I feel about this movie. I wanted to like foist it upon you guys so I could get your thoughts on it. I saw the film we're discussing today, Under the Silver Lake, at Cannes just about a year ago, because Cannes going on now. It was it wasn't quite booed there, but it was like there were just like snickers of derision from all the French journalists there. And it was sort of perceived as a flop out of the festival. And I was like, and we had already started the podcast by then, and I was like, there's maybe never been a film this night call at Cannes before, but also, like, I can't tell if I love it or hate it. but I
that's the problem. Yeah. That's why I liked it, because the whole time I was like, what? I don't know how I feel about this movie at all. And I read that because of the very divided reaction at Cannes, that it was, you know, the release was delayed. There was a rumor that it was being re-edited, but then I think that those rumors were false. But yeah, Under the Silver Lake was written, produced, and directed by David Robert Mitchell, who did It Follows, which I loved. I think we all liked
It Follows. Yeah.
This is the definition of a blank check movie, though, to use a term from our buddies at Blank Check. It Follows was such a success and such a, you know, such a breakout hit. And if David Robert Mitchell ever gets a deep enough filmography, that he'd be a good candidate for that podcast, because this is a textbook example of somebody just like allowed to make a 3-hour like meandering conspiracy epic about pop songs and underground caves for harems in Los Angeles. That's like also kind of an incel / Reddit conspiracy theorist story. I don't know. It's like a lot in the salad.
It's like QAnon the movie.
Yeah.
I will say, for me, this movie kind of lives and dies by the fact that it stars Andrew Garfield.
Yes.
And that was what did not work for me.
Oh, really?
Like, the whole time.
You didn't like the Garf?
No.
Oh, man.
I was doing a little joke tweet. I wanted to make like Hey Girl memes about him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Remember Hey Girl memes? That feels like such a time.
This guy is like the real like Silver Lake guy that everybody's dated.
Mm-hmm. He is everyone's Silver Lake ex-boyfriend. 100%.
Yeah.
Which did not make me like love him exactly.
Oh, I
liked him for embracing his. I mean, I admired his performance, but yeah, he's like a really. I mean, he literally smells bad for almost the entire movie. he has a very like. It's a very studied and unique way of walking and running and like holding himself, even lying on the ground. That's like everything he does is very it's pointed.
His run is incredible. His run is amazing.
Yes. It's very close to like a Napoleon Dynamite kind of thing.
Like a void of charisma, which maybe is the point.
That is the point.
Yeah. Like I will not pretend to know the intentions of this film from the creator, but I do feel pretty safe in saying that we're not supposed to like Andrew Garfield's character.
Right. Correct. I think. Well, first of all, can we just say that there will be spoilers? Because I feel the need to spoil.
Well, and this film is available on demand. You can get it, you know, basically any platform. It was out theatrically for like all of 2 days before they dropped it on VOD. It's kind of the first ever A24 fiasco, like, but they've kind of quietly swept it under the rug.
It's very watchable. I mean, like the problem also is that I watched a good movie first.
Right.
I saw The Farewell,
which
I'm sure we'll talk about more, but like, which is an awesome, like, great movie. And I was like crying from watching The Farewell because it was so good. Yeah. And then I was like, and now time for Under the Silver Lake. And then it was just like the Benny Hill theme song playing the whole time.
Yes.
I think it was probably also like Narcissism of Small Differences. I was like, I would write this movie, but like
with a woman
differently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know?
No, I'm partially like defensive of this movie because I'm like, I kind of want to do something like this at some point.
Well,
so
yes.
We better like some of this stuff.
But no,
it's a very funny, intentionally funny movie.
Part. I mean, like from the part where there's like a really long dialogue scene during a sex scene,
exactly
with him and Ricky Lindholm. Like as soon as Ricky Lindholm turned up, I was like, ooh, like Southland Tales. We're in like Southland Tales territory with just like some good comedians playing weird character roles.
Also, there's paddle boat chase, which is awesome
in the Echo
the
Park
boat
Lake.
In the Echo Park Lake.
That was, I mean,
Patrick Fischler is really good in it, and that's a nod to like Mulholland Drive. I mean, that's the other thing. So I finished the movie, which is,
it's
3 hours long, but just to kind of sum up the plot, Andrew Garfield plays a guy who's very aimless and kind of like bottoming out, and he's in his mid-30s. He lives in Silver Lake. He's a conspiracy theorist, kind of. But he basically is, he's also a voyeur.
He's just a man child. So, like, he's obsessed
with,
like, Kurt Cobain and Nintendo. Like, he's just stuck in the stuff of his youth.
He's like Ready Player One.
So he becomes interested in a couple of mysteries that he thinks might be related that are going on in his apartment complex and his immediate neighborhood. One of the mysteries is the disappearance of a neighbor that he's been, like, maybe trying to romance. And the other one is that all over Silver Lake, someone's been graffitiing, "Beware the dog killer." And apparently a lot of dogs are going missing and they think someone's, like, out, you know, killing the dogs. So he's kind of, like, just intrigued by these mysteries. Also, he has no job. He's, like, not trying to get a job. He's going to be evicted. His car was repossessed. So he's just kind of falling apart and spending all of his time, like, obsessing over these conspiracy theories. Yeah. But then after you finish the movie, you can then go on an Easter egg hunt, and there are all of these crazy Easter eggs in the movie, which also kind of lead nowhere.
Right.
Which the movie, in the movie, everything kind of leads nowhere. It just gets, you get deeper and deeper and deeper into trying to solve these mysteries, and then it just doesn't really matter.
See,
that's the question.
It's a movie about the pointlessness of Easter eggs.
Right.
Yes. I think it's a movie about the internet.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I was like, oh, it's about how the internet kind of, like, takes your drive away from, like, existing in your world as it appears to you. And it makes you feel as though everything has hidden and deeper levels. And you go trying to, like, find what they are. Mm-hmm. But you just end up going, like, deeper and deeper into your own kind of id and, like, become really disconnected with people around you.
Tess, you also get really into local mysteries.
If there was a dog killer on your block, you would be on the case.
Maybe this movie made me uncomfortable because it, like, read me to Philip a little bit too much, too, you know? Where I was like, is it, like, I drive around aimlessly and, like, read people's weird flyers they post on things. I was walking around in Griffith Park today, and I was thinking about the movie.
Yep.
Going to find the tunnel.
All the tunnel stuff.
Yeah.
Again, some of the stuff we were talking about last week with the Getty House and the, you know, the gun cache, like, it's not possible.
Right.
It is. I mean, it's interesting, though, when you spend your time, like, reading and going deeper and deeper. And, like, I also thought that the movie kind of, you know, didn't really spend any time with him in front of a computer or searching on his phone, which is obviously what it was portraying, but not, like,
they found,
you know,
a more cinematic way to represent that.
Yeah.
And, like, put this sort of Hitchcock type score over it. So it's like, oh, it's a real adventure, but the actual reality of the adventure for most of it is, like, pretty mundane. It's him, like, you know, decoding things on the back of a pizza box and stuff. Like,
I wish he had just had the clamshell phone thing from It Follows.
Oh, my God. Well, that was the that's one of the things that I think he's really good at, David Robert Mitchell, is just making a place that's familiar seem foreign. And we were talking right before we started recording with our producer Roy out in L.A., and we were talking about It Follows, and I was like, what I loved about It Follows so much was that it kind of, like, took the past and the future and put them in a blender and then, like, poured it onto a geographic location because it had all of these things that felt kind of retro and reminded you of your childhood, but it definitely also was, like, kind of the future. Mm-hmm. And then it was also, you know, a really, like, beautiful, like, beautifully shot kind of way of looking at Detroit. And
this movie was beautifully shot.
It was gorgeous, yeah.
It's really nice. The kind of self-mythologizing it does, like, I feel like he's so obviously just, like, a shitpost, like, Philip Marlowe type character, and it's like,
yeah,
like, every generation gets the version of that character that it deserves, and, like, this is the one that we get. It's like, you know, down to the, like, you know, looking at his neighbors in various states of undress type thing, but it's just, like, the more depressing version of it this time around.
Right.
It's like Vertigo depressing.
Yeah.
If I think about him being just a bad psychopath in the beginning, then, yeah, sure. It makes sense.
First of all, I think, and this is my theory, but I think he is supposed to be the dog killer.
Well, yes.
But then also, so I went deep into the subreddit.
The Reddit is, like,
for this movie. It's really good.
Well, the one thing to note about the Reddit is that it started flourishing, like, weeks before this ever was released in the States, like off of a pirated copy from a teeny tiny UK release. And so,
Whoa, really?
It was already in full flower by the time it was released in the States. And it's just so funny because it's like, it was already being passed around like this, you know, forbidden thing. Like, oh, have you seen this? Have you heard the good word? Like, have you seen the silver? Like, and like I was saying before it came out, I was like, man, like releasing it almost feels like defeating the power of the myth that it could have. Like, I mean, there's you know, certainly some money to be made by releasing it on VOD and stuff, but it could become like this gigantic cult thing if you just never release it.
Right, yeah.
I don't know.
It should have been like the movie that they didn't want you to see.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that was cool was, so there's a computer scientist guy who was a cryptography consultant on this movie. And so there are all of these like ciphers to decode. So there are these dolls that represent they're watching
How to Marry a Millionaire.
Yes. And there are dolls, and then underneath there's the Zodiac killer mm-hmm. code, which you can crack. And then there's also, like, in a coffee shop in the beginning of the movie, there's a guy who's wearing, like, a weird hipster T-shirt with animal decals on it. Mm. And if you take the first letter of each animal, it spells out, "Beware dog killer." And then there's something on, like, the ticker at the bottom of a news program that they're watching at one point. And it's about the Copial code. And so I guess the Kevin Knight, who was the cryptography consultant, like, created a program to translate the Copial cipher. It just, like, you just keep going deeper and deeper into it. My husband got, like, on finding all the codes in a way that he hasn't since True Detective, when he was like, "What's Reddit? Oh, my God, look at this. Like, there are many theories."
It's a trap.
Oh yeah, God. It's a trap.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, if you try and, like, figure it out, then you feel like that's kind of, like, a interesting kind of, like, compliment to the movie of, like, you're just ignoring things that need to get done and just being like, "What's it mean? What's it mean?"
Yeah.
I think the one thing about this movie is it's not as weird as it thinks it is.
Right. That's yes. The thing is, I think, like, I did keep comparing it in my mind to Southland Tales and being like, Southland genuinely... Tales is legitimately weird. This feels a little bit too much like someone trying their hardest to, like, be weird.
A naked middle-aged woman with birds is, like, a little bit of, like, what's weird?
She was really hot. She was not hot.
Yeah. She was super hot, and then she had weird birds, and then it was like, that seems like a strange thing.
Some of it just seemed like it was like a David Lynch mixtape.
Right.
Yeah, it was.
Well, I feel like another thing that, to the degree that there has been a conversation around this movie, but there has been just among, you know, critics and stuff and people who've seen it, but just the kind of, like, is it toxic masculinity or is it a critique of toxic masculinity?
It's definitely a critique.
It is.
It's 100% a critique. I mean, especially when Topher Grace's character first of all, it's super weird that almost none of these characters have names.
Right.
And I'm sorry, I got really jazzed about this movie, so now I'm yelling. But I will say that when they have a drone and the drone is, like, you know, peeping on, like, some lady mm-hmm. undressing, and they're kind of, like, just sitting there being losers looking at it. It was definitely, to me, felt like it
crying,
was...
And it's just like, oh, God, what are we doing?
You're supposed to feel gross. Like, you're supposed to think they're gross. You're supposed to kind of acknowledge that they feel a little bit gross, but that they're going to continue to do it relentlessly.
Right, again, that's the vertigo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had these people who were living across the street from us for a while, and they crashed a drone into our, like, trash cans and then wrote us a letter being like, "Hey, can you return our drone? It was, like, in the back of your yard right by your window, and it appears to be crashed into your trash cans." And only later I was like, oh, they were spying on us. Like, to me, I was just like, interesting, they took their drone for a little flight
That's
around the
crazy.
neighborhood. And it's like, no. Yeah.
And then they asked you to return it?
And I did. And I did, because I was just like, I don't want this drone near me anymore.
What you should have done is put a geolocator device on it so that you would know when it was nearby.
So I could track.
And then
I could out-drone the drone.
That feels like a neighbors-esque comedy or something.
Train a hawk.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad that you guys watched this. I needed to bring it to the hive, to the table.
You needed to share it with the class. And I'm glad you did.
I mean, I'd seen it twice because I saw it at the festival and I saw it again before they released it. And they were like, you know, trying to figure out what to do with it. I think it was before they kind of just dumped it. And yeah, I don't know, man. Like I have a friend who saw it. I mean, it's a friend you guys both know, but and was like, oh, God. Is that guy me? Is that me? Have I been that guy all along? And I'm like, no. Like, mm-hmm. I lived with that. I was the roommate of that guy before. Like, the kind of, like, quote-unquote, like, filmmaker who, like, has a sort of girlfriend slash friends with benefits who comes by and has been, like, doing background on Mad Men. So she comes by and, like, secretary costumes and stuff. And they just, like, get stoned and, like, maybe have sex. And I have to, like, be listening in the closet next door.
See, this, we'd rather watch the movie about you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe it was very too evocative. Close to home. Again, I was just like, I know too many of these locations, so they can't be like exotified right. in any way to me, you know?
Well, it's like, also, I think, a really good kind of commentary on how if you're living in LA, most people I know are very close to, like, you know, losing their homes, losing their cars. Mm-hmm. Like, we've all kind of been there in the past 10 years or so. But you still continue, like, as long as you have that balcony that overlooks the pool, even though you're about to be evicted, it appears fine. You're going to the cemetery screenings. Mm-hmm. You're going to these, like, weird parties in a crib.
Going to the standard
and
roof.
And you can kind of pretend, you can kind of pretend that nothing terrible is happening, you know, and it can kind of stretch on seemingly forever. Like, they come to evict you, you beg for another day, and then there you are the next day on the balcony looking at the beautiful pool. So, and also shout out to Tomato Pie, which is, like, I think the best pizza on the East Side, even though it's very spicy pizza, unexpectedly. Love seeing Tomato Pie on
film. I guess I feel like this movie was, like, it's, like, of a touristy point of view, and it feels like it was made by a tourist. And what was so good about It Follows, and It Follows was such, like, felt like, I guess maybe I also just don't really know what Detroit looks like. So it was like...
So you would be a tourist in Detroit, so it rang
true
to you.
I mean, disagree. I don't really feel like it feels touristy to me. I think, like, the kind of... The particular, like, patina of patheticism that is nailed in this movie is, like, I don't think you would get that if you were just a tourist. I think you... Like, maybe you're somebody who moved here from Ohio or whatever. Here, I say here, like, I'm there right now. But
right, it's a transplant.
But movie. but has definitely been there for a while, enough for things to get kind of sad. And that feels
right.
That doesn't feel touristy to me anymore because that just feels like a big part of the LA experience for a lot of people. So
most people here are transplants anyway. Not true that most people are transplant. Not most people in Silver Lake. I would venture a guess.
Only because they pushed out all the people.
Agreed. 100 I'm not saying it's good. I totally agree, but. I think a lot of 30-year-olds or 33-year-olds, I think he's specifically 33.
Yeah, I guess I just found him so boring. I was like, wished the movie. I don't know. I liked the milieu, but I didn't. He was just so gross.
Did you like when he got stuck to a car door handle and it was like a Spider-Man comic with bubblegum?
There was like the Spider-Man thing. I mean, I guess it's like interesting if you were making all the Spider-Man movies and then you were like, I want to make the opposite of that, you know?
It's definitely the opposite of
that. As far away. Because he was even like the likable guy in the Facebook movie.
No, that was his breakout. It was like, oh, he's like a little puppy. I love him.
He always played likable guy. So I guess it's just like,
well,
I don't know. I guess I just wanted somebody a little Nick Cagier, you know, like the best QAnon movie, National Treasure.
Well, Night Call listeners, if you've seen Under the Silver Lake, if you've decoded every single code in Under the Silver Lake, if you have any thoughts, please give us a Night Call at 1-240-46-NIGHT or a Night email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Do you guys want to take a Night email?
Oh, yes.
So this email comes to us from Trevor. And Trevor writes, "Hello, ladies of Night Call. The mention of panpsychism in the last edition of Night Call caught me dead in my tracks. You see, I studied for a year under Galen Strawson, the most famous panpsychist philosopher. He was a tall, deliberate man, but skinny and somewhat hunched, like he was unsure and tentative about his presence in the world. He had a larger-than-usual head, supporting an untamed fountain of long gray hairs that grew up and out in all directions and gave him the look of an old hermit on a mountaintop. His lectures pondered the strange vicissitudes of life in the world and his deep conviction that there surely was consciousness somewhere, but that it just wasn't anywhere he could locate it. The stuff of the world is mind stuff, he would say, to clarify that anything has the capability of conscious energetic movement. Galen himself seemed to be a consciousness without memory or experience. He would talk about forgetting having a wife or children and often began statements with, "I'm sitting here, before launching into a thought, as though he was a floating consciousness trying to get into character as a person before doing person things like making statements and talking with students. With this, I wholeheartedly recommend Galen's candidacy for the Night Call Museum. Peace, love, 420 from Austin, Trevor."
Peace, love, and 420 to you, Trevor. Thank you for getting in touch. That was a really good
night email. This is so evocative.
Yeah.
I feel like I know Galen. I'm not familiar with Galen, and I wasn't even familiar with panpsychism before we talked about it last week, and then I had to look it up afterwards. do you guys have any professors that you had a special memories of?
Yeah. I mean, nobody who was a panpsychist, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, no panpsychist. There were two professors. One of them was a literature professor who was super strange. I took her class on...
Oh, is she the one who married poetry?
No, that was a TA. Unshockingly, it was a TA. This woman was obsessed with King Arthur, and she would kind of like vacillate between talking about chivalric code, and she had lost like, I think like 200, she lost a significant amount of weight. And so she would tie in her weight loss with like getting really into King Arthur. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. But also she was not a fan of my writing, so I eventually hated her. And then there was a guy who taught a class on film architecture, and he was just super interesting, I think German guy.
What does film architecture mean?
Like, it was literally just buildings in films.
In movies?
Yeah. It was one of the best classes ever.
That's an amazing class.
Yeah, college is fun. Shit.
It was a lot of like The Last Man and Metropolis and yeah. Blade Runner and like cityscapes.
Oh,
and
that's so cool.
It was an awesome
I'm
class.
I'm jealous of that class.
Yeah.
You just said college is fun, Molly, but like my college was so full of like requirements. And then I just made a film. Like I didn't get to do all the like noodly, like fun, weird electives that a lot of people do.
Tess and I both picked the college where you could do the noodliest stuff.
Yes, then... but that was part of my major because I was an art and architecture major.
You were an architecture major?
I wanted to do architecture for my first 2 years, and then I did like history of art and architecture and then pivoted to writing.
Man.
Yeah.
I had no idea. What was the best architect you studied?
Don't ask me these questions.
Okay.
I'm already racking my brain for the professor's name who did film architecture.
The architecture of panpsychism.
my first couple of years, I went to Loyola Marymount, and the Loyola. I think all the Loyola schools have really rigorous core requirements. Like you have to take a certain amount of philosophy classes and theology classes and stuff. And those actually ended up being probably my favorite classes, including film classes, that I ever took in
school. Did you talk about panpsychism in your philosophy class?
No, she just looked it up yesterday.
But we talked about that's where I learned about, like, the noosphere and stuff. And, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who was, like truly, like, mind-breaking stuff. And I learned it from, like, a Jesuit priest. And so it was, like... kind of super chill and it was like in this pretty old building on the campus of Loyola, which like looks like a resort, and we were like just thinking about all being cells in a brain someday. it was great. But he was by no means any kind of character like this guy that Trevor described, but it was a great class.
we recently on our Facebook page, this is kind of related because if we were in college now, I assume that we would all be really interested in neural networks, which I knew nothing about. Neural networks knew nothing about them. But somebody on Facebook, Nightcaller Charlotte, prompted a neural network with the prompt Strange Days and Lonely Nights and got like a night call poem. Would you guys mind if I read it?
Yes, please read it.
Okay. It's so Strange Days and Lonely Nights. I was so proud that I was a woman. I had no idea that I could be happy. I couldn't seem to say goodbye to her. I was so proud that I was a woman. I could tell the universe has changed. I'd rather have a friend than a partner. I'd rather have one and a partner than a husband. And then suddenly I was alone. It wasn't until later that I realized that these lonely nights and lonely nights were no fun, that I was no longer there, that I could hear her whispering in my ear, I'd rather live in the present, live our lives. But in order to make it there, I had to take off. But to feel so empty and alone, it seemed I had to go. And then I went away to the desert. I left a big mess. And after a while, I came back. It's like a very Nightcall-y.
It's so predictive. It's so wonderful. Wow. We'll have to post it on the Patreon site on the show notes. That's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
I played around with this thing for a little while because they sent us the link for it. It's called talktotransformer.com. That's the name of the neural network. I only vaguely understand neural networks. Like, it's just supposed to be like a simulation of how the brain works, but using like, I guess by scraping stuff off the internet? Is that how they...
I think so. But it's, I mean, yeah, it's like predictive text that has been like crowdsourced from the internet, I guess.
Yeah. So it's different. I always kind of do like enjoy those memes where they're like, type I love and then just like do whatever the autofill is in after that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I never post them, but I always like seeing what my phone thinks I would say. Because it's always a little bit spooky to see that version of yourself. Yeah, this kind of felt like this, but I guess more like, I guess sourcing from a larger pool of information than just what you would put on your phone. I tried to make it do some Game of Thrones content, but it really felt like it was just grabbing text from, well, it even said it was like from Screen Rant or something. It basically made like automated content. Like, you know, that's a thing that actually happens. Like
SEO scraping.
Yeah, SEO scraping, but then like automatically, like AI generated content. Like the robots are taking away the content farm jobs.
But it became popular, right? You did like a Game of Thrones thing and it got shared like 1,000 times.
It was just like in the text, it was like, this has been shared.
Oh, 1. That's 2K. Hilarious. I was like, what does this mean?
Oh, it's so weird. No, it was like it just had all of the customary, you know, text at the end of a blog post.
That's so funny.
Do you guys
weird.
Remember there was a Clarissa Explains It All episode where she like builds a program that writes poems and then wins a poetry contest with a poem that the robot wrote?
I do not remember that.
It's great. It's the best because it was like probably the first time anyone ever showed a girl like programming something.
Right. Yeah.
Also ethics
yeah,
and STEM.
Yeah. Then she tells everybody. Because she feels bad.
There was a Wishbone episode that involved a poetry assignment. That's a thing that I remember. But I think it didn't have anything to do with computers. It was like, I think it was a Cyrano de Bergerac episode. So he was like having somebody else write a poem for him.
You were like, Wishbone delivered the Pentagon Papers.
that would be an incredible
coup by Wishbone.
You know what's a weird show? Wishbone.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever gone back and watched YouTube videos of that? It's kind of hard to believe.
All children's programming is insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All children's programming is under the Silver Lake.
It is.
We have one more night call we wanted to get to before we close out today. Coming to us from John. Here he is.
Hi, night call. So in episode 62, you talked to Penny Lane about her documentary, Hail Satan, and the challenge that the Satanic Temple posed to supposed religious freedom in the USA. I haven't seen the documentary, but the value of this film seem pretty obvious from your discussion. So here's my question. Years ago, I was a teaching assistant for a course, Cults and New Religious Movements, taught by the late David Kinsley, who argued that the term cult should not be based on beliefs, since all religions seem to have some strange beliefs, at least to outsiders, but cult should just be reserved for groups based on behavior, how they treat people within the group, whether they let them have access to their families, have some measure of freedom, something like that. Do you think this is true? Do you think behavior is the only measure of something being designated a cult? Or do you think there are some beliefs which are dangerous enough or that they ought to be designated as cults? Thanks so much for the podcast. It's amazing. Bye-bye.
Great question.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call, John. Yeah, this totally got me thinking, and we were thinking it was very appropriate for talking about Under the Silver Lake as well. I think at this point in history, especially like after, you know, this kind of wave of cult-like activity, like in the 60s and 70s and stuff, that the kinds of things that seem to signify a cult and the kinds of things that cults believe in and the way that cults dress, that kind of seem to supersede like the actual mechanics of a cult. You know, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like this is like a good way to have some perspective on what actually is a cult or not, because you can have somebody that believes in crystals or energy healing or whatever, like, but it's not going to be a cult because you're not like, you're not holding people against their will or making people pay you or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting distinction to bring up.
Yeah, but if you're using the crystals in a group.
I mean, I think that there's the differentiation between, you know, a cult that believes in terrible or ridiculous things versus just a group of people who believe in terrible or ridiculous things. You can condemn, you know, horrible beliefs across the board, but without dictating other people's behavior, I don't think it's a cult.
Is Reddit a cult?
No, because, well, unless the rules of the Reddit were that you know, had to pay a certain amount of your money to, like, the moderator.
Right, right.
I mean, the basic rules of any kind of, like, website forum, I don't think are cult-like.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a thing. I feel like there has to be some kind of addictive quality to a cult, like whether
right,
it's a, like some kind of dependence or something.
Let's talk about, like, Reddit conspiracies, though. Like, if you start, like, if it becomes like an addictive behavior, like an internet addictive behavior, where it's like you're placing going on the message board above like interacting with human beings. Like,
right.
That's culty.
Or like you, if you show any doubt or wavering from whatever the conspiracy of the day is on the forum, mm-hmm. that you're like, and then you're shamed by right. for it by your peers, as opposed to just being like, oh, like, that's an interesting way of thinking about it. Or, like, I disagree, but whatever.
Right.
You can go your own way. That feels cult-like, for sure. I mean, I don't know if that – I think there's a fine line where it becomes religious and not.
Right.
But, yeah.
I mean, honestly, more so than people who have, like, internet addictions or whatever, I think multi-level marketing is the most non-religious, cult-like
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which also now a week ago, if you're listening to this, but Jane Marie posted on Twitter a link to an article in The Cut about side hustles, like, oh, how, you know, good ways to, like, make a buck. And the last one was, maybe you should join an MLM. And it was
wait,
like,
really?
Yes. It was in The Cut. I was so disappointed.
I think it was a joke, maybe.
They did have a little link at the end that was like, just make sure you know what you're doing. And it was like, you're going to lose all your friends. But, like, a lot of the proposed solutions to making more money were, like, sell your hair and stuff where you're like, it would be nice if people could have a job.
Article. Yeah, that's
very
horrible.
Depressing. But if you really kind of look into the people who are super, super involved with MLM, it's, like, the beliefs part of it where you know, they actually, some of them really do believe that what they're selling is good and everyone needs it. But it's more the behavior that they're expected to follow in order to sell this product and the way that, you know, they kind of fit into, like, the greater scheme of things, that it's problematic.
Is, like, Herbalife an example of that or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rodin and Fields, mm-hmm. and everyone go listen to The Dream. But, yeah, there's there's a good Facebook group called Sounds Like MLM But Okay, that, you know, because Facebook is like obviously the vehicle where all of these people are selling these things, and then you just tag that group. And
yeah, I mean, it's so weird when you bring capitalism into it, because it's like capitalism is basically a religion in our country. Like,
exactly.
And so when you're
like, it's like heterosexuality a cult. Like, like there's a lot of bad groups that people buy into. Is like,
right,
these things are true.
Yeah, I mean, anything can be a cult almost. Definition.
Well, I guess it's also like I'm just always very skeptical of group activity. I'm always a little scared of like a crowd turning into a mob.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like a soul
cycle. A bad direction. Well, yeah. There's just something about like losing yourself to the will of the group that is inherently depersonalizing, and it like can be good. It can be the best feeling in the world. It's why people do psychedelic drugs. Mm-hmm. But it could also be bad, and a lot of people who join groups, it's because they like don't know what they want, and they want someone to be like, here's what you want, you want to do this.
That's
that
why
it could be used for good.
That's why in hindsight bad. I feel like the entire EDM boom was like one big like sub moment, like everybody just wanted to be like dominated by
it's a mega church,
the drop.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if I would call that a cult necessarily, but it has, because it's sort of just this sort of aspirational thing, it kind of has a spiritual quality to it. And the way that, you know, people feel when they're on drugs and they're listening to music like that can have take on a spiritual quality. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
People need community, and there's just always that fear that like one day one of the people in the community will be like, okay, now it's you're in this cult, you know?
It's time to take this to the next level.
I feel like you must, like, Tess, as a parent, people must be invite you to weird things all the time that you don't know if they're cults or not.
Well, now I feel unpopular. I'm like, what does she mean by invite me to a lot of things? I've had a few friends who were into multi-level marketing schemes and tried to get me involved. One of them was, like, very, very pushy. They're called Huns. Because it's like, hey, hun, how are you? So they're referred to as huns. And one of them, I was very offended that she thought I was the type of person to, very offended. First, I was like, she thinks I don't have a glowing complexion. And then I was like, she thinks I would sign up to sell like very overpriced, crappy cosmetics. No, I buy my stuff at the drugstore, hun. Come on.
But if you want to buy water that we spit in or some bonus episodes, join our book club.
One of those things exists and one of them doesn't. Just spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Two truths and a lie. Join our nightclub Patreon. But also, as always, you can call us at 240-46-NIGHT with all your questions about the universe.
You can also follow us on social media. Our Twitter is nightcallpod, Instagram nightcallpodcast, and Facebook nightcallpodcast.
And, of course, support us on our Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall. Join our book club. You can get all sorts of other fun stuff. We're planning some events coming up this summer that we'll let you guys know about as soon as we know when they are. And subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And leave us a rating and review while you're there. Why don't you? Thank you all so much for listening this week. We'll be back next week.
Yeah, the moon is shrinking, but our love for our fans is only growing each day.
Aww. It's very sweet.
We're a good cult.
We are. We're the good kind of cult so far.
But also, give us your money at patreon.com/nightcall.
See you next week.